obviously Christian talked to me, run multiple businesses here in Australia. So Joe Blow is just one of them. Our main focus and our main business that we have is a hairdressing salon called Tognini's, which is my surname. And it was started by my father and mother almost 40 years ago now. So big, strong legacy brand in Australia, and especially in Australia, and in our hometown in Brisbane. Also, I run that for our family. And we also have a large education company called Little Off the Top, which does hairdressing education worldwide. So we do lots of stuff in Australia, a lot of stuff in Europe as well, America, New Zealand, Asia, pretty much all over the world. So COVID for us has put us definitely on the ground with the hairdressing education thing. And we've another business that we've looked at pivoting and changing up what we were doing in our offerings as well, seeing we couldn't go to people and see people one-on-one. And then Joe Blow is another one of our brands that we have, which is the men's hair loss. So it's all been a sort of natural progression into what we've done. And I think for myself, business has always been a part of my life, and I love running businesses.
Welcome to the Winning E-Commerce Experience Show, where it's all about creating a brand that your customers love so they keep coming back. This show is brought to you by DataQ. Your store experience begins with your homepage. DataQ improves your conversion rate up to 30% by showing each visitor a personalized homepage based on their interest. And now, your host, Sharam Anver.
Hey, guys. Today, we have the co-founders of men's hair loss brand, Joe Blow, Christian Ternani and Trav Voigt. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. All the way from, Christian, all the way from Australia.
Yeah. And we're doing this sort of this new style kind of conversation with the pandemic where it's almost all on Zoom, but it's kind of enabling some cool possibilities. I'm sitting here in Luxembourg and you guys are at your homes in Australia.
Oh, it's so cool. It's awesome. How good is technology?
I know, especially when you manage to get it to work, right? I always, like, have you seen, I've seen that comment about, you know, what are the three most said things during the pandemic? The one was that something like, you know, how are you feeling? And the other one is like, are you able to hear me? Hello?
No. or you need to turn on your microphone. We can't hear you.
My advice is also, can you mute your microphone, please?
You know, I saw this really funny one where there was this, they were having this Zoom conference call, and then one guy forgot that his video was on and he was in his underwear, and then he went to go get some coffee and the whole office could see him in his underwear walking through. And then someone had to like frantically call him saying, hey, like you're on camera right now. So, well, listen guys, it's really great to have you guys on. I think it would be good to just start off with, for everyone, for our listeners out here, give us a really quick introduction. Like tell us who you are. Maybe we can start with you, Christian, and then we'll go and go to Trav. And then sort of that origin story of the brand.
Yep, sure. So obviously Christian talked to me, run multiple businesses here in Australia. So Joe Blow is just one of them. Our main focus and our main business that we have is a hairdressing salon called Tognini's, which is my surname. And it was started by my father and mother almost 40 years ago now. So big, strong legacy brand in Australia, and especially in Australia, and in our hometown in Brisbane. Also, I run that for our family. And we also have a large education company called Little Off the Top, which does hairdressing education worldwide. So we do lots of stuff in Australia, a lot of stuff in Europe as well, America, New Zealand, Asia, pretty much all over the world. So COVID for us has put us definitely on the ground with the hairdressing education thing. And another business that we've looked at pivoting and changing up what we were doing in our offerings as well, seeing we couldn't go to people and see people one-on-one. And then Joe Blow is another one of our brands that we have, which is the men's hair loss. So it's all been a sort of natural progression into what we've done. And I think for myself, business has always been a part of my life, and I love running businesses.
Trav?
Yeah. Well, I'm Trav. Where do I start? I basically have a sales background. I worked at Red Bull for a number of years, selling Red Bull. Something interests me about agency world. So I basically went and started a creative agency. We were working with Red Bull. I managed to get them as a client. We're working with them all across the globe. Did some really cool stuff with Heineken and a bunch of other brands. But then my attention sort of turned to digital, and I really quite liked digital, and I liked, I liked the data specific in digital. So I gravitated and I started a digital agency as well. I was a lot balder than I was. I am at the moment, what was beforehand. I basically started to do a lot of research, and I started to look into why it was happening, why me, why my head, why is this happening specific to me, and started to sort of break down exactly what the ingredients were and what specific I was lacking and why it was happening. And what I started to do is I started to go, and I was looking at options here in Australia and abroad, and basically saw that it was super expensive, like really expensive. I'm talking like crazy expensive. So what I did is I don't know if it's quite legal, and I don't know if it's good to say it on a podcast or a vodcast, but I started to import those ingredients specifically from around the world, and I'd go and import them, and I'd just basically go and I'd, consume these ingredients from around the world, almost to a point where my mates would say, "Hey, can you get me some a little bit?" And I was like, "Okay, cool. I'll just get a couple of it extra, and you could just split the costs or whatever." And I went to school with Christian and Jules obviously throughout high school, and I always had my hair cut by Jules, which is Christian's brother. And their conversation came up, and just sort of talking about how I'm purchasing this sort of stuff. And then we just got talking more. And I guess after you leave high school, you kind of end up, I guess, separating a little bit, not seeing as much as each other. And we sort of said, "Hey, obviously with your background in the hair industry, there's a big market between these really expensive products that are out there, and I can go and order it from overseas and get it a lot cheaper." Then the idea started happening, and then we got to hang out again, like high school, and we got to hang out heaps. We started to put together a really beautiful brand, that's kind of how Joe Blow kind of started, just a couple of high school friends looking for an excuse to hang out more when you're adults.
And solving a really important problem which you experienced personally, right? And that's one of the things which I found is almost like sets those best brands apart, where there's like a very personal story for the founders. I mean, in this case, you're with Christian and Jules, and you guys are sort of like, most of the times I speak to people who are running e-commerce sites, it's almost like a one man or one woman show. And in this case, you guys seem to have like really merged people with very, very different sort of skills, but very complementary from what it sounds like. I don't know if, so Trav, it seems like, you merged that sort of understanding the sort of that problem or that identifying that niche and knowing a lot about sales and e-commerce, and then coming to essentially the Tonini brothers saying, "Hey, like you guys are the experts in hair. Can we use that expertise and bring this together?" Is that like a fair sort of summary of what you guys did?
Yeah, I think it's a perfect summary. I think it's great for myself and my brother Jules. We've always worked together, and we're very complementary with our skills as well. So for the hairdressing salon, for example, I run the business side. He looks after the hair side. So you've always worked with someone that's the total opposite. And then so when Trav came to us with the idea, it was like, "Oh, Trav's the absolute perfect person to put this whole thing into place." And it was something that not so much hair loss, but we'd looked at doing hair products previously, but probably didn't have that third person to really commercialize it and make it a success. So it was just lucky that Trav had done his research and came to us at the right time. And I think everyone, it was one of those things that was meant to happen, obviously.
So I'm going to ask sort of maybe a little bit more different question here, because I'm really curious to dive into the dynamic a little bit before we get into more of the brand. Because when you're a one man or one woman show, or let's say a one person show, I guess you have this one vision and you just go execute. So then you're just looking for people to help you with different things, maybe outsource. And I know talking to these people that it can be a very lonely thing, because, you know, entrepreneurship, that in, you know, Kristen, you've just said that you love running businesses. It can be pretty lonely because, like, you're the one with like it, all the problems sort of like are really on you, and you need to solve whatever fire that comes up. But in this case, it's really cool that you've got sort of three friends coming in. How do you guys manage that dynamic? Do you have any, I mean, I'm sure there are some differences in where you want the business to go. How do you guys make it work? How do you make it successful?
I think, well, I'll speak for us, Trav, for the first point anyway. I think it's first for me, it comes down to respect. So it's respect for the other people that you're in the business with is number one, and what they do. So it's not always that I'm right or Trav's right or my brother's right, but you've got to have respect where someone's coming from. So if you're in business or a partnership with anyone out there, I think it comes down to respect and respecting that person's voice and their opinion. And if you've got that mutual respect, it's a really good foundation where you can build the business from there. So one number one thing with working with any partnership or anyone else is having that respect and understanding why they're part of the business as well. And because we all have different complementary skills that go into the one whole, it's really important to listen to the person that's the expert and respect that person's opinion when it comes to that part of the business as well. Mm. Like any bigger business, when you've got different departments and you might have the marketing department, finance department, etc., it's the same thing just on a smaller scale.
Trav?
I think, so I've always run like my business by myself. So it was a bit of an educational learning for me as well, because, you know, when you're running your business by yourself, you make the shots, you come up with the ideas, you execute, you go ahead and do it right there and mm-hmm. then with no pushback or anything like that. So I think for me, it was definitely a learning curve, but I think KT, like, nailed it on the head. I think lucky because we've known each other for such a long period of time, and we do have friendship, but we also have that respect for each other. You know, understanding their point of view, and, you know, it's when you commit to a partnership, I think it's always about, you know, you can't just, like, you can fight for what you believe in, and, you know, if you want to fight for it and do it. But I think do it in a very respectful way, to a point where, you know, you can't throw the toys out of the pram when you don't get your own way. And that's happened 100 times with us. Like, I've gone, no, we're going to do this. We're going to do this. And then they're like, no, we're not going to do it. I'm like, God damn. Oh, damn. All right. Cool. All right. Next idea.
I got toys.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason I ask you this is because it's such a really important topic that I don't think you can really learn from a book. It's one of those things which, because I think, you know, it's almost like you guys started off because you've got such a strong, deep relationship that you know, from high school and things like that as friends. So I guess you guys built that sort of platform of respect, which helped a lot. But I think it's also accurate to say that not every friend is the perfect business partner, but it would help to have a business partner who is a friend. It's almost like it doesn't work, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So, and you know, we've heard so many stories of like people who start off being friends, getting into business, and then things don't go so well, and, you know, they don't want to see each other again. It's very hard to make this formulaic.
I think it's luck, to be honest with you. I've gone into business with another friend in the past, and it completely crumbled. I haven't spoken to him. It completely flopped. It got legal. I think that both Julian and Christian and I, we all kind of share the same vision on the business, but I think it's more cultural as well. Like, we understand that, I understand everybody's strengths and weaknesses, and I think everybody does. I think everybody understands that. And I think it truly comes down to luck to be able to truly trust somebody or trust a business partner or, you know, right. Be able to, like, you know, I know for a fact that, you know, they've got my back and I've got theirs. And that's been through 3 years of running a business together, but also through high school and whatnot as well. But the one thing that you can't sort of manufacture is that respect. And it's like, I know for a fact that Christian or Jules would never do anything like that, and they'd have always got my best interests and vice versa as well. So it's kind of like, I think it does truly come down to luck, because, you know, you could have the best friends in the world and then you go into business together and then all of a sudden it completely falls apart. And it's happened to me, and it costs a lot of money, and you start losing a lot of hair. But
well, it created this new brand, yeah. Right? But that's kind of what I was trying to get at, because now that you've, I guess even more so on your end, Trav, that you've been through sort of both of these so different experiences, are there things that you have as advice for people listening, thinking, what are maybe some qualifying questions or experiences or things that someone should think about before they go into business with somebody else? Like, you know, one thing that comes to mind is, and I've heard this quite a lot, is that before you, because getting into business together is like a marriage. So maybe you do a project together, which doesn't have so much commitment, and you try to, you know, that's one idea which I've seen thrown around a lot. But is there something else? Because, you know, surely you guys had these meetings, and then there were certain things which were, I guess, sort of experiences that you had with each other that sort of reassured you that this other person is someone capable or deserving of your respect, so to speak. But what are those kind of things or advice that you can give people to try to assess that as quickly as possible?
Well, I think, Christian, we worked together beforehand, I think, on, like, when I was running my creative agency, we kind of did the little off the top, one of his other businesses. So we kind of built his website and did his branding. And I think we did get a kind of a good vibe on how we do sort of work. You know, the great thing, I think, with Christian and Julian is I'd come up with an idea, and then they would say, all right, run with it. Like, a lot of the clients that we used to work with kind of try and smother you with, like, their own ideas and kind of, like, crap on your work, where Christian and Jules kind of came up and just were like, yeah, this is okay. You got this idea. Go, just do whatever you want. If you like that, go get it. And it kind of, mm-hmm. I don't know, it was quite empowering, especially from a creative point of view, to just have somebody be like, if you love this, then run with it. And they just kind of, I guess, empowered us. And it was kind of cool, because Christian and Jules would come up and be like, oh, we really like this. And they'd be like, okay, cool. And then you'd go and build upon it. You'd be like, oh, and you'd both get excited about it, because they're allowing you to do your thing, and they're obviously allowing me to do my thing, and they're frothing as much as I am, because they're getting more than what they asked for. So I think that was a really good, I don't know, Christian, if you agree, like a good
start. Yeah, I totally agree. It's like you like you were just saying, qualifying questions was, you know, it was already qualified because we'd worked with Travis in the past. So it was, I mean, if it was someone else, I guess, going into business, my other hot tip would be align your end game. So having that end goal and that end game and working towards the same end game, it's really important, because if you don't have the same end game or it diverts at some point, I find that that's when partnerships or businesses and even marriages are the same, that they change, yeah, and they, you know, break up and split up and things get ugly. It's because whatever that end goal was that you were trying to achieve, if not everyone's going and working towards that goal, that's when things don't align, and it's not pretty.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting that you mentioned this thing about marriage, because I've seen the same advice there too, where, you know, going back to this business thing or a new relationship, you almost, like, you're so excited by the initial idea or this initial sort of relationship that it's working, that that's all you really want to talk about, when maybe, like, you know, if it's a girlfriend or a boyfriend or a potential business partner, it makes sense, like what you said, to talk about that end game and just talk about, like, right, like, what exactly do you want out of this and what do I want out of this, and then try to hash those out until before you have more complicated things like finances and visions and all that coming in. So I think that's a really great point.
Absolutely. And it's like we're talking about before about trust and, you know, obviously very important in a marriage as well. But so for me, relationship is, whether it's business or personal relationship, I think that the values are quite similar.
So let's change track a little bit, because I mentioned this a little bit before when we summarized sort of how you guys started the business. One of the really key sort of success criteria which I've seen is that if you're going to be marketing something, you better really know that product really well, so that you can actually be authentic when you're communicating to other people. Like, you know, I've seen way too many ads on YouTube right now in the dropshipping business where you can do, you can just get whatever product you want from China and you're going to be a millionaire. And, you know, I'm sure, good luck if you are doing that, great. But like, probably a more, reliable source of getting good at business is really connecting, right? So how do you guys sort of think about that? Because again, it sounds to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like Trav is the guy who's the embodiment of your customer.
Trav is the customer, he is Joe Blow.
Kishan and Jules, you guys are sort of like the product guys, right? So
yeah, pretty much, you hit nail it on the head.
You've read our website. Yeah.
So is that something which you found really helpful, that you at co-founders, you've got someone who embodies?
Yeah, it's certainly helped, absolutely, because I think it goes, you know, you're selling towards different personalities within that too. So everyone's obviously got different buying groups and different personalities they're trying to sell to. So Trav obviously hits one of those personalities or one of those buying groups, and we've lost him. Are you back?
That wasn't good.
Oh, we got you.
You still there?
Yeah.
I think I just had some. All right. So sorry, guys, we just got disconnected, but we're back. So we were just talking about how Trav being the embodiment of
the perfect customer. Yeah, absolutely. I was just saying that it's great having Trav as one of the perfect customers, because I do believe that you are selling to different personalities and different buying personalities and different buying personas. So Trav definitely fits like one of those personas perfectly. So you know that if you get someone on the site, like Trav was talking about before, about all the research that he's done, and we find that a lot of, especially males that are losing hair, do a lot of research into any type of product before they touch it. If you look at our website, there's so much of our product before we even hit the product side of things, it's about education. So we would really want to educate our consumer about our product to make sure that they're so well versed in it and they understand what they're taking or what's in things and how long things are going to take to see results, et cetera, et cetera. And Trav's the perfect embodiment for it, because if it doesn't turn Trav on, what we've put out there, especially in the education side of things, then we're definitely not hitting that buying persona or that person that really wants and is really, really looking for that information, a deep dive into hair loss and why it's happening and why it's happening to them. Does that sound fair, Trav?
Yeah, I mean, through our research, we've discovered that there's 5 buyer personas specific to the men's hair loss category. One is, we call him Research Rod. Research Rod essentially is me. We couldn't think of another word that started with T and Trav, so it's just Research Rod. Basically, his buying journey is a lot longer than a stereotypical person. Essentially, they like to do their fact checks. They like to check the company, do the research. Essentially, we're one part of what we call about inbound marketing, educating them, building trust. One other, you know, I won't talk about all 5 of the buyer personas specifically, but one thing that we were, you know, really surprised on is that over 40 to 45% of most of the people that do purchase the products are female.
Women.
And they are female because they're buying for their husbands, boyfriends, and girlfriends.
Yes,
so that actually was really quite surprising, because once we sort of did a bit of research on that one, We actually had to change the way we communicated slightly, especially through our automated and nurturing emails that we had as well, because we use HubSpot as our marketing platform. So we're able to do a thing called smart content. So if you tell us whether you're a guy worried about his hair or your partner is losing their hair, we'll actually change the marketing that we'll specifically nurture through to you specifically based on the answer to that question. So if you're saying that your partner's losing hair, then all the correspondence is going to give that person, empower that person to make that decision and educate them and also talk to them in a bit more of a humane way. Whereas such, if you're a research rod, we'd change that nurturing information specific to detail about specific ingredients, how this stuff works, how long it takes. We have got another one specifically that basically is just like the try and buy sort of the guy. So we really do focus a little bit more around money, you know, the cost of the product specifically, you know, and then basically cost comparison between other products. So it really does come down to personalizing and humanizing, I guess, that buyer journey that you've got in there specific, so that, you know, we're addressing each of them in a way, but also doing, I guess, marketing in a way that's a little bit more personable and a higher chance for conversion specifically based on their needs and challenges. So hopefully that answers that question.
Yeah, because the way I was thinking about this was, again, going back to that conception of someone starting an e-com business, and clearly one of those success criteria is that have someone on your team, if not yourself, that you is the ideal customer, right? Because that is, there's nothing better than to build something for yourself because you know yourself. So clearly that was research rod, so to speak. And then you had these other personas, but
the nagging partner. That's what it's called. Nagging partner.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying we called her the we called them the nagging partner.
Right. These are the ones who buy the products for their partners, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So when you came up with that initial customer or buyer persona, you came up with some assumptions, right? And you already mentioned one where something you missed, which you didn't expect in, you know, the female partner buying for their husbands or boyfriends. That sounds like an important thing which everyone should sort of pay attention to, because you start the business with a core set of assumptions, and then in the course of your business, things change and you really need to adapt. How are those, how did you guys essentially like try to make that learning as fast as possible? Were there any deliberate things that you did to try to get this feedback so you can adapt, or was this, I'm sure at the start it was more by accident and then you got better and better. But, you know, if you were speaking to somebody who's sort of just starting now, what are those things that you did that really helped accelerate that?
So we have a very, very stringent process on this, and I can share it with you if you like. okay, a very stringent process. Here we go. So basically, it comes down to a few stages. So the first stage that we have is the research stage. Research stage is super important. And basically, if you're within a business yourself and you haven't necessarily, you know, done any of buyer persona research or anything of that matter, it's great because you're able to review data from the past and you're able to set a standard for data collection and an analysis for the moving forward. So there's two parts, I guess, that you really need to look into. Is one is the ideal customer profile. So essentially me, that's, you know, your ideal person is me. One thing that you've also got to look out for is your non-ideal, people that potentially could be wasting your time. This helps specifically, especially around paid search and paid social as well. You know, knowing exactly who those people are that are not necessarily going to purchase on your website. So you can look at a few attributes and look through past paid social, paid search. You're able to sort of go through and really review and research a lot of that stuff. you kind of go in there and do a lot of those research, we go through and we created a questionnaire pop-up on the website. That's for the traffic that hasn't converted. And what we did is we probably put around 10 to 15 different questions specific to the product and also the experience on the website. What we did as well is we also sent out an email and a questionnaire specific to past customers that have canceled their subscription. And we also sent a questionnaire of up to 15 questions to current customers as well. We also reached out to abandoned carts and then offered them a voucher specifically for answering those questions on why they didn't purchase. So what we tried to do is we really tried to get a good form of an idea about who these people were, who were they purchasing, how old they were, the reasons for purchasing, where they currently, what was the biggest concern, what was their biggest challenges, how did they find us, mm-hmm. what was the main reason that they purchased, all of these motivations, I guess, and I mentioned here is to better understand their motives, pain points, challenges, and goals. So then once we sort of captured all of that accurate data, we kind of went through internally and sort of did a bit of a workshop. And then what we did internally was really sort of try and speak to us individuals on what we believe the personas are. So what we did is we go, okay, well, hey, Trav, you know, who do you think the perfect persona is? A bit biased because I was running it, but that's fine. But you can ask specific people. It's perfect. It's me. But what we did is there's a couple of other people that work within the business too. So what we started to do is sort of ask them questions. What do you think the perfect persona is? And then almost facilitate that meeting specifically so that they can all have an open conversation. Now, with the required, well, with the data that you've sort of received and sort of analyzed and sort of brought in, together with the internal discussions that you're having internally about who the perfect persona is from an emotional standpoint, what you can kind of do is kind of pull those two analytical and emotional sort of data points together and start to whiteboard. Okay, well, you know, the person that's purchasing a lot from our data specifically are these people in this buyer persona that have answered these questions, that usually purchase at this time of night, that usually have visited the website 15 times prior to purchasing. They open up every email and click on every single email. So what we can do is we can start to group and analyze those people specifically and actually put them together in a bucket. Then what we started seeing is that a lot of people were purchasing on behalf of their partners. So then we put that up on the whiteboard. Then we had another person that was, I can probably pull it up here, but there was another person that essentially would never purchase, but they would always, you know, consume it, but they would never purchase, but they would only spend a small amount of time on the page. But people like me would spend, you know, up to 3.5 minutes on the page. So then we can start, especially using HubSpot as our software, is using cookie data, is actually start to create things called smart lists. So we're able to automatically put people into a list specific on their cookie data based on a lead scoring matrix that we had. So if people were spending more than 3.5 minutes on a website, that's going to give them some points to become a research rod. But if they're going to 15 pages and only spending 15 seconds, they're not really consuming. They're worried about it, but they're probably not our perfect buyer persona. We probably shouldn't be targeting those people specifically because they're not that fully committed to it. So, you know, creating things like lead white papers specific, which is now available on our website, those were an opportunity for us to put that there and get those people so that we can drip feed and try to educate them as much as possible using the smart content that we said. Anyway, as we go through, we create an ideal buyer persona, a negative persona, and then all the other personas, roughly around three, sort of depending on the e-commerce business size that you've got, just making sure mm-hmm. that they are different to all of them. So all in all, you should roughly have about 5 buyer personas. Once you have a really good idea about your ideal buyer persona, then I think it's a really good, you know, opportunity to, one, document that. So be able to put it onto a sheet of paper. I know that for our buyer personas, I put it next to my desk. So whenever I'm writing content, whenever I'm updating the website, whenever we're doing a social media post, you've always got to look back at that persona and go, is what I'm doing addressing those pain points to that person that I'm ideally trying to sort of target? And you always need to sort of be refreshing on that. It's a good rule of thumb when you're first doing your buyer personas to always do them 3 to 6 months, to refresh them. Have the, you know, go out there and send out some more research. Ask the, you know, potentially in your checkout, add another field. Ask a question. Ask if you're good at scripting in your checkout and you've got plus, then be able to sort of, you know, tick through a bunch of different questions as they're going out and start to sort of profile those people specifically, and then catch up. If it's a one person, two person team, catch up and dedicate some time to analyze that data, review it and update it based on the findings. After 12 months of doing this, you should be an absolute professional and know exactly who you should be targeting, and your conversions will be a whole lot better specifically to that. So, I could continue on and on and on, but
no, usually... I think that's great. Because essentially what you're talking about here, if I try to summarize, is that don't start doing your marketing without at least having the decency to come up with some hypotheses, right? Like you're essentially coming up with the hypothesis of some buyer personas and then set up some kind of data collection, however, depending on how much resources you have, and then keep using the data you collect to validate whether these hypotheses you made were correct or not. And if they were not, keep adjusting those so that you always have an objective in mind before you do a single piece of content or any kind of marketing campaign. Is that fair?
Correct. Yeah. And usually the process timeline specific to this is usually kind of around, 4 weeks. So, you know, you're being sort of, I mean, that's if you kind of, I don't see a lot of people doing it exactly like this, but this is kind of usually the process timeline that we sort of work on when we do buyer personas, just to sort of really, truly do it properly. I think that if you are a new e-commerce business or you are sort of looking a fairly experienced one, I would commit to doing this properly and just like spending a lot of time on it, because what you'll find is that, you know, if you are using a marketing automation platform of any sort, or you are doing any paid, like you will scrutinize more so what you're actually writing, even in social, even what you post to Instagram, even what you're writing in a blog. Essentially, this really breaks down exactly the content you need to be creating. If you're creating a blog, when you're writing that blog, you need to look at that thing on the wall that you've put there and going, is what I'm writing helping this person overcome their problem of hair loss? And like Christian said,
I get the feeling that you're almost getting to do all the things you wish you could have done with your clients back in your agency days. And you're like, yeah, I'm doing it right now. Finally.
Yeah. It's kind of cool. Like you, you kind of get to, the boys just say, okay, go do it.
You see, I want to bring you into this because, just a real quick one, but because we've talked a lot about buyer personas and we've learned a lot. So Trav's doing all this work, getting to know customers. How does that affect how you guys, which I'm assuming it's like sort of the Tanini brothers in charge of, affect the product? Do you, because I'm sure that's a big part of learning, right? Like I don't know whether it's the packaging or how you present it or things like that. These are all very product focused ideas. So how do you?
Absolutely. So currently we've used all the data that Trav's collected and the big data. So if you actually Google DHD blocking shampoo in Australia, Joe Blow is the number one that comes up on Google. However, we don't have a DHD blocking shampoo. So we're gathering data from all sorts of different areas to affect our product choices. So at the moment, we're in making a formula for DHD blocking shampoo based off the data that's coming through our website traffic, because obviously that's what people are going to our website for or trying to buy or trying to learn about. So it'd be in our best interest to offer that product. The same as what Trav was talking about, where we found a lot of females were buying for their males or for their partner or for whoever it was. The other part of Joe Blow is Josie Blow, which is the female version of the hair loss. So our product selection moving forward is purely based, or not purely, but the majority of the new products that are coming out before we spend big money on launching, producing, formalizing, packaging a product up, it's come from our data that we're currently collecting already, because we know that as soon as we launch, we're going to make sales.
So is the ideal persona research Rhonda in that case?
Yeah, it could be. Absolutely.
Okay. That makes sense. Because it seems like if you really want to do this well, you can't drop the ball, not to put too much pressure, but like you need to make sure your marketing and your product is on point. One would argue that marketing is your product as well, right? Like if you don't have a good product, then there's really not much to market. We've built, I think, a lot of expectation now. I think it will be a really good time. I don't know, Trav, Christian, let's take it away. Let's jump into the website and let's have a look.
All right. We'll have a little dig. And if you're anything like me, a website is never finished. I think I've...
Trust me, we're always our website's biggest critic. And yeah. I think that's one of the things which I'm always trying to tell, you know, everybody else. You almost have this analysis paralysis every time you're trying to do something on your own. And you just be like, look, when it's good enough, just go for it, right?
Sometimes it's good to take a holiday from it, to be honest with you, and focus on another part of the business and just come back after like a couple of weeks and go, all right, where are we at? sort of thing. I might just run through and you can kind of just sing out as I'm talking if you want, and sort of go from the top down. Jules, Christian's brother, is Australia, the number one men's hairdresser in Australia. And Jules is charismatic. He's lovable. He's a good friend. He's a good brother.
He's a good front man.
He's a good front man. And Jules hasn't got too much to do with the tech side. He knows what he likes. And Jules and I have come to an agreement with what it looks like. And I think we're all stoked really with how it's sort of come to where we are today. So Jules for us, essentially, has been sort of our front man, essentially. One key thing before we get kicked off on this page specifically is that I did an analysis of every single hair loss company in the world. I looked at every single hair loss company in Australia. I looked at every single in New Zealand. With every hair loss in America, I looked at it and I cherry picked and I basically did a short list. And I sat down with Jules and Christian and said, I love this brand. I love this brand. I love this brand. I love that brand. I love how they do this. I love how they do that. And I basically sort of cut and pasted things out that I really liked. And sort of, I use a platform called Whimsical, which is a landing page wireframing software. And we sort of started to put together a whole bunch of, you know, things that we did like. The one thing that was very prevalent across all of the sites is that everyone doing everything in this space had a lab coat and they were talking in a language that was just completely crazy that I had no idea what to talk about unless I researched for 4 weeks prior to understand what saw pomelo was or biotin and all this sort of stuff. I found it hard because everyday people like Christian and myself and Jules are just guys that had jobs, that like to have beers on the weekend, that, you know, have great partners, got kids, you know, we're just everyday people. I'm not impressed by a lab coat. I couldn't give a crap about your lab coat. What I want is someone to...
You can swear on the podcast. It's fine.
Yeah. Sorry. Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll beat that out. I couldn't care less. I just want to trust somebody that... Like, I just want to learn and I want to trust somebody that I can partner up with somebody that would actually give me the information I need to know and also the products I need to know to help me with the problem.
So and the really important thing for us too, Trav, sorry to stop you there, was to make sure the imagery was of lifestyle. So we looked at brands like Deus, for example, that originally sold motorbikes and now morphed into a clothing company that do multiple different things over multiple different, between surfboards and have got cafes all around the world now. And really want to make it was, and the one question we kept coming back to and asking ourselves was, how do we make hair loss cool?
How do we make it cool?
How do we get people to talk about it? So in the salon day to day, dealing with customers day to day with guys that are losing their hair, how do we make these guys talk about it and feel okay talking about it? Because there's a big market out there that wasn't being touched. And that was, like Trav was saying, a lot of the hair loss that was on the market were white lab coats and had a bald spot that was there. And there was a guy that was 40. Where we're finding in the salon, it was guys between the ages of 23 and 35 were losing their hair. So how do we make that a preventative treatment for them and a preventative product that they feel comfortable talking about with their mates and also feel like the imagery and everything about it was lifestyle enough that they attracted them to the product and felt okay purchasing it as well. So it was a really big thing for us that not only are they educated, the imagery, they felt like they were part of something as well.
I feel like there's a really good point here about keeping things simple, because correct me if I'm wrong, but I think hair has got a lot to do, or hair loss has got a lot to do with sort of insecurity, because it's tagged to so much about, you know, being a man, that like you, any sort of like heroic man on a movie has got a nice, you know, lots of hair there, right? So it seems like if the approaches that other brands were using, where they're trying to make things really complicated with lab coats and things like that, were probably exacerbating the issue even more, when really what it seems like keeping it simple and like making it more lifestyle was really like sort of like a more gentler way of addressing that and say, hey, it's okay, like we can solve this for you. And
yeah, you know, absolutely, you kind of thing. 100%. So you just, it's one of those things that people, it's played on the insecurities, and it was had to be locked in, and it was clinical, where it's like, it's not clinical. You can have hair loss and you can still skateboard or surf or do these lifestyle events that people do day to day, and feel empowered to talk about it and for it to be okay. It's okay. It happens. And then this is a product that can do something about it for you. So that's what we're trying to get, can save to the customer.
I think also as one brand that people can feel proud to sort of buy, I think usually hair loss is a little bit embarrassing in some cases. So it's kind of like we try to sort of create a cooler version of what it was that people didn't necessarily feel embarrassed. If, you know, if it was in their bathroom, they could just feel kind of confident about it. So it was kind of just creating a, you know, just looking at the industry and what they're doing and say, how can we just do this so that I wouldn't feel so embarrassed, or Christian wouldn't feel as embarrassed.
And I remember you saying that at the start too, Trav, when we're talking about how we were building the product and the brand, and it was, you know, at that point you didn't have a partner, and it was, how do I not feel embarrassed if someone stays over the night and I've got this hair loss thing sitting in my cupboard in the bathroom, because it's white and clinical, and oh my God, what's those pills doing there, or whatever it is. And it's making a brand that it fits in with your general life and your lifestyle. So the way that the products are designed and the packaging that we've chosen is to make it fit and it to be cool.
Yeah. One rule of thumb I always have when sort of creating an e-commerce site is, and I say this with all due respect, is to create it for the most simple. There we go. That's a good way. For the most simple person in the world. The only reason being is that a majority of people on the internet aren't necessarily the smartest people. You know, if you've got Hotjar or specific tracking information, you'll notice that people have ADD when they're on an e-commerce site. The thing that you've spent 5 hours crafting, they'll glance over that in 2 seconds and you'll be like, why did I even spend time on that? So it's important to remember to create stuff that is very simple to understand, but very simple for the commoner to understand, because if we can do that, then you'll have a better, I guess, rate of conversion. And this is kind of the next point that I bring it into, is invest into photography, invest into photography, invest into photography, invest into photography. Depending on what your niche is or whatever it is, invest into photography. It will.
So do you think people should invest into photography?
110%. We were using.
Okay, I didn't quite guess that. Okay.
Because for us, it changed the game. Like, we were using some stock imagery. We were using, you know, here, there, and everywhere. We got a professional. We got a good guy from Brisbane called Bobby Rain, bobbyrainphotography.com.au. Very, very cool guy. I love him. He's a great guy. The second that we got our photography and everything done. And Christian, I think you can agree, it was just the puzzle that just perfectly fit into the website. It just went, okay, this is the masterpiece I've been sort of trying to craft here. It was beautiful. It was gorgeous, and it was exactly what we wanted, and it was us, and it was everything that we sort of put together. So as soon as we invested into the photography piece, it just completely, you know, from an engagement point of view, but from a time on site, from a conversion, obviously coming in from the bounce rates dropped considerably as well. So we, as soon as we invested into it, we definitely saw, the return on investment per se.
Do you think we could link that to the previous point you made? Because, you know, in terms of keeping it simple, and I think it's fair to say that ADHD is a thing that we have to deal with, like social media and everything. Like, there's a pretty much information overload for all of us. We spend hours and hours and hours building our internet properties, but you kind of have a few seconds in anyone's mind because, you know, even right now, people, the way they surf is that they've got like 20 tabs open immediately. So it's almost like imagery is one of those, maybe one of those quick shortcuts to try to get someone's attention in a tasteful way, not doing, you know, these crazy banners. And then hopefully if you've got good photography, you're encouraging someone to spend the time to read the copy, which is arguably also very important.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I think it's people, I think people are very, very shallow when it comes to, you know, touching a new brand. They'll look and see and make their mind up within the first couple of seconds about being there, whether they want to be around there anymore than they need to. But I guess sort of touching on the page a little bit more, you'll probably notice we've kind of used Learn More quite substantially, not buy now. We found that using the word Learn More converted 35% more than shop now, crazily. We really came down after we did some research into that, is that Learn More is non-committal to shop now, because especially in this, for our target buyer persona and who exactly that we're targeting, Learn More, when we did some split testing for the CTAs, Learn More had a higher conversion rate than shop now, which was quite funny, because up here, usually you'd see, and the best practice for an e-commerce site is to always have the shop now button quite big and ready to go. But what we found is that the conversion rate was quite higher when we actually clicked on Learn More, which actually took you to the page that it was going to take you anyway. So that was an interesting, definitely an interesting learning that we had as well. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like, I guess the advice here is to be true to those buyer personas that you come up with, because your ideal customer was Research Rod. So anyone reading or looking at these best practices, I think that's always something I recommend everyone do, is try to be true to your objective. Because if you read and you say something like shop now, if your persona is someone who wants to learn more and understand and do a lot of research, then maybe that text isn't for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we talked briefly about Josie Blow, the women's side of things, and it's going to be interesting to see what the data throws up when that gets launched, because it may not be learn now for the women. It may be shop now. Maybe they just want to do it as fast as possible. We don't know, but the data will tell us that in due course.
Yeah.
Right. So it's almost like you find out these best practices and things like that to get going, but then do these split tests. Split tests are always a little bit dangerous because you need enough traffic to do these, to run these split tests. But maybe when you're a little bit earlier on, you could do some of the things like you mentioned, like surveys and things like that, just to understand what are people trying to achieve. But there seems to be like some really basic things that anyone can do now, like investing in photography, like you mentioned, Trav.
Yeah. I think if I've got any advice for people just starting, just starting an e-commerce store, is that when you do your buyer personas, set yourself a very, 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 like, if you're serious about like crushing it per se, is 100% set yourself a task. Even if you're a bad writer, it's completely fine. Like if you're talking from, write articles about it, write articles about exactly the problem that your target buyer persona would find interesting and helpful in order to sort of, I guess, get them to understand and how your product or service can help them fix their challenge that they've currently got. This is one of the areas, you know, one of the things that we were researching into quite substantially back in the day. And I was looking into the different stages of hair growth and hair loss and what happens specifically. This is all good content. This is like the best content out there. Agreed. But you can truly understand the life cycle of a hair follicle, why it does it, then sort of like start to sort of like whip it back to why our products is like, it's not a hard sell, but just whip it back. And then what we understood is that, you know, we kind of wanted a men's hair loss guide and to understand and deep dive even more. So once we sort of click on that and we get, you know, get them to sort of give us their details and install that marvelous cookie on their computer so I can start tracking exactly where they're going and what they're doing and what they're clicking on, then all of a sudden we can start putting them through our nurturing sequence, which lasts up to 90 days. Get a bit heavy at the start, lighten up in the middle, offer a little bit at the end of the month and all that sort of stuff. So it's, you know, the main aim for what you're doing specifically is to educate and give as much value as you can to your target buyer personas so that you are the authority in your space or they see you as the authority in their space. And ultimately just try and help them with their problem. And if you're genuinely trying to help people with their problems and overcome them in a sincere way by creating content, creating a website, creating information, being a thought leader, they are 100% either going to buy your product or start recommending your product. Or if you are writing a blog a week, SEO is going to start picking up and people are going to start reading it and start discovering. Just like our DHT blocker shampoo review that we did, which we don't have DHT blocking shampoo. But again, like, you know, Christian said, you know, we are getting a lot of traffic from that keyword specifically. So we're like, we probably should just give it a crack. It's a lot of traffic coming from this page. So we might as well give it a crack. So.
Thank you guys. I think this has been incredible. So much good advice. It's going to be hard to like put all of this stuff into a summary, but hopefully everyone listening in has kept up. Kristen, I don't know if you have any sort of parting sort of advice as well to share that we can end on a high note with. No pressure.
Oh, no pressure. I think it's like anything in business, and whether you're in e-commerce or not, or you're looking to go into that space from a maybe a bricks and mortar business, is don't give up, give it a crack. Because I mean, that's all that we've done here is was an idea that started, it formed, and it slowly pieced together to a brand that we have now, which is Joe Blow, which is kicking some great goals worldwide, and it's a brand that we're super proud of, like the three of us. So there's no reason why you guys at home, if you're thinking about getting into it, if you are doing it, refine. And like Trav said before, test your market, see what's selling, see what's not, but never give up, keep going at it. If you don't have that hero product that's selling at the moment, try something different, have a relook at your data, see what's there, come back in, retest it out, build something new for that buying persona that is your target buying persona, and go for your life. You only get one chance, so go for it. That's what I always say.
Love it. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Trav, I think you can stop the recording.
Ah, perfect.
All right, how'd you guys feel that went? You're still here, which means you definitely enjoyed that conversation. This is a special COVID-19 e-commerce miniseries to help small business merchants out there get prepared. We're doing a lot more of these, so be the first to know whenever there's a new episode. Just follow DataCue, that's DataCue, on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn. Stay safe out there, everybody. Till next time, this is Sharam.